our job as leaders is to be sure that everyone in Alaska shares in this prosperity.
The legislature gavels into the start of the legislative session. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, January 17th. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, sizing up the potential for Alaskan exports overseas.
There's no doubt about it. This state, particularly when you compare it to the rest of the union, is in a lot better position.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the statewide BP Teachers of Excellence Program. Nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com. Nominations are due by February 14th.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
The legislature got underway in Juneau this afternoon with the usual pomp and circumstance, joined by some serious hopes for major accomplishments members can point to 90 days from now, APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
Lawmakers are expecting a very busy session and some very contentious issues this year. While many members have been preparing by learning about oil exploration and taxes, there is a more complete look at some of the other bills that will likely get attention during the year. Speaker Mike Chenault, a Republican from Kenai, says members expect to approve the remaining legislation needed to set up a university scholarship program the governor's pushed for the past 2 years. He pointed to bills waiting for the Senate to approve, saying each of those measures is important to someone in the House. He emphasized a bill making decisions on an in-state gas pipeline from the North Slope to South Central. Kotzebue Majority Democrat Reggie Jewell, who is also chairman of the Bush Caucus, says energy issues are becoming critical, particularly for rural Alaska. Jewell also points to needing some decisions addressing an expectation of cuts in federal spending in the state. He says there are still 6,000 families without clean water and sewage systems in rural areas, and there's been a lot of talk about reductions in postal service.
If we see reductions in federal spending in those areas, and we have people from Congress who are saying the state of Alaska should pick up those costs, if that whole issue moves forward, you know, that really could pose some real issues and challenges. Because of the impacts that those have. Now, I think we're going to be okay this year, but it's the people are bringing up those issues, and it's a looming threat. And those are the kinds of things I think that we really need to be mindful, because it may change how we look at the priorities for rural Alaska and competing for those dollars.
Democrats are concerned about what the state does with its money. Minority Leader Beth Kurtula from Juneau says there's new work going on the North Slope and in Cook Inlet. Jobs are rebounding from the recession. Drilling is approved in the National Petroleum Reserve. Mining is strong with high prices. And the state's credit rating is AAA.
The governor really would like Alaskans to believe that the sky is falling. And I've lived in Alaska just long enough to have seen this cycle play out more than once. But in reality, we know Alaska is doing extremely well. And our job as leaders is to be sure that everyone in Alaska shares in this prosperity.
Governor Parnell will have his say before a joint session Wednesday night when he'll deliver his State of the State address. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
Backers of a citizens' initiative to reestablish an Alaska coastal management program have submitted nearly 34,000 signatures to the State Division of Elections. The Alaska Sea Party held a news conference in Anchorage this morning to announce the total, which is about 8,000 more than the group needs to place the measure on this year's statewide ballot. But as KTOO's Casey Kelly reports, the Sea Party hopes the legislature is able to resolve the issue before it goes to a vote.
Alaska Sea Party Chairman and Juneau Mayor Bruce Botello says about 250 volunteers spread across the state collected the signatures in record time.
We received our booklets 27 days ago, and the task that we had before us was an arduous one.
The Division of Elections now has 60 days to determine if there are at least 25,875 signatures of valid Alaska voters. The division will also make sure the Sea Party collected signatures from at least 7% of registered voters in 30 of the state's 40 House districts. Botello expressed confidence that both thresholds will be met.
I would put it this way, we would not have filed had we thought that we did not have the requisite distribution.
The Sea Party set out to collect the required signatures before the legislature convened in order to give lawmakers an opportunity to pass substantially similar legislation during the 2012 session. Botello, a former state attorney general, said Lieutenant Governor Meade Treadwell will make the initial decision on what substantially similar means. But the Sea Party expects any bill would have the same basic elements as the initiative. Botello said that includes a policy board made up of coastal residents,
which makes sure that there is a role for local districts in the formulation of that statewide policy.
The initiative also would make the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation part of the coastal management structure. Former Governor Frank Murkowski removed DEC from the program to make the regulatory process easier on industry. Botello said the Sea Party wants a comprehensive program.
We would expect all regulatory agencies that work within the coastal zone to be a part and at the table in the implementation of coastal management.
Before closing down last year, coastal management helped developers navigate the complicated state and federal permitting process. It also allowed the state to comment on proposed federal regulations or projects that affect Alaska residents and businesses. Initiative co-sponsor and Kodiak Island Borough Mayor Jerome Selby said Alaska's small businesses suffer most from the lack of a program.
I found it pretty interesting. The number of people that I talked to, contractors, small business people, others who are already encountering difficulty in getting their federal permitting and the coordination that's missing without this program.
If the legislature adjourns in 90 days without passing a similar bill, the measure will go on the August primary ballot. If the legislature takes longer than 90 days to adjourn, the initiative will appear on the November ballot. Last year, the Parnell administration and some House Republicans fought efforts by rural lawmakers and Democrats to give local communities a voice in the program when it came up for reauthorization. House Speaker Mike Chenault, a Nikiski Republican, isn't sure about the prospect of substantially similar legislation passing this session.
We can make decisions today based upon if there's enough signatures or if there's not enough signatures, but what decision can we make? You know, there may be two or three different ways to go at coastal zone, and we'll just have to look at see what options are available.
Governor Parnell's spokeswoman, Sharon Lehow, said the administration would have no comment on the initiative today. In the past, Parnell has said the state can live without a coastal management program. The administration estimates it would cost about $5 million a year once it's up and running. A significant portion of that would be paid for by federal grants. Any program requires federal approval, a process that could take up to 2 years after it is submitted by the state. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Alaska's Game Board has decided to delay a decision on a controversial plan to expand the use of snares to kill grizzly and black bears as a means of predator control. Bear snaring is limited to an area on the west side of Cook Inlet. A proposal before the board at the current session had allowed for expansion of the practice to Game Unit 19A on the Kuskokwim River. Supporters of the proposal say it will boost moose populations by removing predators, but opponents told the board during public testimony that it is not an effective management tool. The panel could reconsider expansion of bear snaring in Game Unit 19A at its March meeting in Fairbanks. The Board of Game today did pass with amendments a predator control program for Game Unit 26B, which allows for land and shoot killing of brown bears by agents of the state only. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, employers turn to workplace wellness programs to lower health insurance costs.
If we all take better care of ourselves, we can have an impact on the cost of care and therefore an impact on the cost of health insurance.
Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
You can find APRN headlines and more online at alaskapublic.org. Local, national, and international news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. AlaskaPublic.org, connecting you to Alaska, one story at a time.
Last year, Alaskan exports topped $5 billion for the first time. Governor Sean Parnell made the announcement today based on a final tally of exported goods from last January through November. And according to an international trade expert in Anchorage for tomorrow's World Trade Center Alaska Forecast Luncheon, Alaskan exports can expect to grow. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
Last year's $5 billion-plus in Alaska exports for 11 months represents a $800,000 increase over all 12 months of 2010. In 2009, Alaska's exports totaled $3.3 billion. The governor's announcement confirmed earlier predictions of passing the $5 billion mark, as well as a new leading customer for the state. China has replaced Japan as the state's top international market, with over $1.3 billion to Japan's approximately $970,000. Japan was down about $100,000 from 2010. The export figures appeared the day before Wednesday's World Trade Center Alaska's annual International Export Forecast Luncheon. One of the speakers at the event is Ariam Vasquez, a nationally recognized global emerging market economist for Wells Fargo Country Risk Management. Vasquez is a regular contributor and economic source for Bloomberg News, Reuters, CNBC, the BBC, and CNN Finance. Vasquez says Alaska's Pacific Rim location and raw material resources distinguish it from other exporting states and bode well for the future.
There's no doubt about it. This state, particularly when you compare it to the rest of the union, is in a lot better position. The geographical proximities to Asia, which is a region that is booming, whether you look at South Korea, China, India, or the Southeast Asia basin, I think any of those countries are a natural fit, and particularly for a strong commodity exporter as Alaska. These are nations in Asia that are needing of this energy and of these commodities in order to serve as inputs for their exports.
Alaska's major exports include seafood, forest products, natural gas, and refined petroleum products, and minerals. The European financial crisis is of high concern, but Vasquez says Alaska's Asian customers and their economies are in a good position to absorb any negative impacts.
They carry very low debt. Their fiscal deficits are very, very manageable. In many instances, they're surpluses. And on top of that, their external liquidity position is very, very strong. That means they have vast levels of excess reserves, current account surpluses, strong FDI flows. Also, you have flexible exchange rate regimes that could serve as a buffer in times of these crises. Out of all the emerging markets that we focus on, Asia is by far the best situated to address this potential downturn.
The state also benefits in that it deals in raw resources to Asia and other customers rather than finished products. Vasquez says Alaska's minerals, fish, and petroleum and gas products are faring much better than California, Pennsylvania, or New York's more finished commodities. State figures show Alaska's seafood posted the largest year-to-year increase, around 35% to $2.5 billion. Mineral ore exports rose by 34%, precious metals by 28%, and coal up 15%. Alaska's exports to China alone increased slightly over 50%, and Vasquez says China could likely continue as the state's number one customer.
The Chinese phenomenon, for all the talk you hear in the press about they're slowing down and there's going to be a significant deceleration in economic activity, don't buy it. China will still grow anywhere between 7 and 9% growth rates for the next couple of years.
Alaska's third largest market for 2011 is South Korea, followed by Canada and Germany. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
We've all heard it before, lose weight and you'll be healthier. Now more and more companies are trying to convince their employees to drop pounds and meet other health goals. They hope workplace wellness programs will help get spiraling health insurance costs under control, and the evidence in Alaska is that it's working. As part of our series on the cost of health care in Alaska, APRN's Annie Feit has the story.
2 years ago, Jeff Davis was overweight with high blood pressure and high cholesterol. The 55-year-old president of Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska says his unhealthy lifestyle sort of crept up on him as he got older.
I was watching the scale go up and up and up slowly over time, and I was watching my blood pressure go up and my cholesterol go up, and I was taking more medicine for both of those issues. And it was not a good situation, and my physician was really worried about it.
He developed metabolic syndrome, which can lead to diabetes, a heart attack, or stroke.
That was not a place that I wanted to be.
Davis was taking expensive medication each month, but even as an insurance executive, it wasn't that dollar amount that convinced Davis to make a change. It was wanting to be around for his 4-year-old adopted son. So he saw a nutritionist, figured out how many calories he was burning each day and his fat percentage, and he walked away with a very specific plan for losing weight.
And I don't know, maybe I have obsessive compulsive disorder or something, but I took that and maybe it was really realizing where I was, you know, that what I was doing was affecting my future health significantly. I took it to heart, started following it, measuring portions, which I'd never done before, started working with a personal trainer. This was October of 2010.
After 6 months, he'd lost 39 pounds and was off all of his medications. Studies show about 3/4 of healthcare dollars go to treat chronic diseases. The Centers for Disease Control estimates about 1/3 of those are directly attributed to unhealthy lifestyles. In other words, they're preventable. For Jeff Davis, the implications are very clear.
If we all take better care of ourselves, we can have an impact on the cost of care and therefore an impact on the cost of health insurance.
That idea is something Dennis McMillan understands very well. The president of the 4-Acre Group has spent 2 decades trying to find affordable health insurance for nonprofits in Alaska. He hasn't had much success, but he has learned a lot along the way.
Our discovery is that before you start getting mad at everybody else because of what's going on, you have to kind of look at yourself and saying, what am I doing to be healthy?
So in October 2008, the 4-Acre Group started a health benefit plan for Alaska nonprofits that focuses specifically on employee wellness. About 35 nonprofits are currently enrolled.
There is tons of evidence that when you have workplaces that engage in promoting wellness with their employees, that employees are healthier first, which is the best thing. And the second thing is because employees are healthier, insurance rates start to stabilize.
More than half of the nonprofits who renewed with the plan this year had their rates decrease, and one nonprofit saw their rates plunge by 19%. Those decreases can't all be attributed to the Employee Wellness Initiative, but McMillan thinks it's a big factor. A lot of companies are just starting to focus on wellness, but the city and borough of Juneau has decades of experience with it. Human Resources Director Mila Cosgrove says it began in 1989, when officials with the city were alarmed at how quickly health insurance rates were going up.
They're kind of trendy now, but at the time they put it in place, it was there weren't very many employers who were doing that.
The Wellness Initiative offers free biometric screenings, blood pressure checks, and exercise challenges. Plan members collect points for participating that can be used to lower their monthly contribution amount. Cosgrove says over the decades, they've figured out which wellness initiatives fizzle and which work well.
Another very successful program that we've done is Weight Watchers at Work, where we have brought somebody on site, we do weekly meetings, and a number of employees have participated in that and lost literally a ton of weight and enjoyed better health because of that.
Over the past 5 years, the city's health premium increase has averaged a bit less than 6%. Cosgrove says that compares to a national average of about 13%.
And cost is one piece of it and certainly a very important piece, but also a key component is it's one of the ways we demonstrate to employees that we care about them and their families.
even though the city has been able to hold down health care costs. She says it still represents a huge amount of spending for the city. The bill comes to $7.75 per employee each hour. Cosgrove says that's a big chunk of change, and it's not at all clear that amount is sustainable long term. But she says the wellness program is at least one solution towards keeping that chunk from getting too much bigger. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2012 PFD. Also, paper applications are located in your community. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
The Renda has been pumping fuel for about 24 hours now. Sitnasauk Board Chair Jason Evans estimates that about 500,000 gallons have flowed into the tanks as of this afternoon. Crews stopped the flow of gas last night around 2 a.m. after finishing a compartment of gas on the Renda. There were no serious issues, but they wanted to replace one 400-foot section of hose. They conducted more pressure testing this afternoon before starting back up on gas operations. Diesel has been flowing nonstop since that hose came online. Evans says 24-hour watch of the lines continues.
They're walking that line constantly, just making sure that every fitting and every containment catch is still set up properly and to make sure that there's no fuel coming out of it. And so far, everything's gone perfect.
Evans says fueling operations could finish tomorrow afternoon or evening. The vessels could then depart Nome as early as Thursday morning. The plan is to have a morning departure to have adequate daylight to navigate out of Nome's shore-fast ice. Many Bethel schools have been closed for the sixth straight school day, counting Monday's teacher in service, due to frozen sewer pipes. But the problem started over 2 weeks ago when school was not in session. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Mark Earhart has the story.
Many Lower Kuskokwim School District buildings have been closed for 2 weeks due to frozen sewer pipes when temperatures dipped into the negative 30s. The closing started affecting students last week as they had been on winter break during the initial freeze. Many had hoped the district could get the problem sorted out by Tuesday as the district held a teacher in-service day Monday.
The sewer line has been rebuilt between the high school and the lift station into the city system.
That's LKSD Superintendent Gary Baldwin.
And there are now sewer lines under the school that are frozen, and we have made some progress thawing those. They're not completely thawed out.
He says the district is getting help from the facilities department at the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation here in Bethel. Baldwin says that the Bethel Alternative Boarding School held classes Tuesday, but the four other schools in the district were still non-functional. Those schools are Bethel Regional High School, Gladys Jung Elementary School, McKeelingut Lee Nauvat, and Iopun Lit Nauvat, the Yubik Immersion School. Baldwin says the freeze-up was essentially caused by the lack of use of the district's sewer lines during Christmas break. He also says the pipes are aged and susceptible to freezing. In Bethel, I'm Mark Earhart.
A waterfront commercial property in Ketchikan has new owners with a new vision for the site. A local company purchased the borough-owned property that was an old pulp mill at Ward Cove for $2.1 million. As KRBD's Deanna Garrison reports, Ward Cove Industries is hoping the site will become a new hub for southern Southeast Alaska's maritime mining and fishing industries.
Ward Cove Industries is a new startup company owned by father-son team David and Andrew Spokley. The Spokleys own and operate Power Systems and Supplies of Alaska, a fuel and freight delivery company. A day after closing on the biggest purchase of their lives, 350 acres of tidelands and uplands in Ward Cove, Dave Spokley says the two remain optimistic about what the property can become.
When you look at the property, do you see an obligation and responsibility and a lot of work, or do you see an opportunity? And, you know, and depending on your mood, but 90% of the time we're always optimistic and we always see opportunity. Every once in a while you come down and you're just like a little tired and you're thinking, there's a lot of work to do here.
Among other things, Ward Cove Industries is planning to build boats, manufacture modular floats, operate a welding and fabrication shop, install an industrial harbor, and partner with another company to develop a regional waste oil recycling facility. The Ketchikan Gateway Borough took ownership of the vast majority of Ward Cove following the collapse of Gateway Forest Products in 2002. Borough Mayor Dave Kiefer was elected to the assembly the year after in 2003.
I was there then and have sat through many meetings since then, hearing people say, well, if we should just do this with Ward Cove, we should do that with Ward Cove. And it's run the complete gamut. I mean, there's been a remarkable number of ideas out there. Unfortunately, most of them probably unrealistic.
Beyond their ability to come up with the financing to actually close on the property, Dave Spokley believes Ward Cove Industries stands a better chance at actually succeeding in developing Ward Cove than the two previous outside companies that made offers on the property. The former pulp mill property was identified as a Superfund site by the Environmental Protection Agency. David Spokley says he isn't concerned with any lingering environmental issues with the heavy industrial property. Spokley says the company's development plan centers around the harbor.
This is one of the only non-freezing protected deep water ports in Alaska. And so we started talking to other customers that could use it. And so now we have a design for about 20,000 linear feet of fingers, slips, piers, and dock space.
Spokley says the company wants to attract the Bering Sea Fleet to Ketchikan. Both businessmen sound more like community economic development directors than individual businessmen. David Spokley says their goal in purchasing Ward Cove extends far beyond their business.
Making money is something a business has to do in order to grow or expand or to keep employees. That's about third or fourth down the line for us, but we need to be cognizant of it, but our purpose is actually to accomplish something, to make a world a little bit better for our kids and to provide opportunities.
Mayor Kiefer is hopeful the Spokleys will succeed in developing the site where the borough faltered.
There was always the possibility, wow, we could do something great out there and really develop economic development, or B, we could find someone in the public to take that on for us who would hopefully do a probably better job. The government is usually not very good in the business of economic development, because government tends to like one size fits all ideas, and true development doesn't come out of that. It comes out of, you know, individual initiative, individual drive, individual circumstances.
The money from the sale of Ward Cove will be put in the borough's economic development fund. With the $2.1 million from the sale, borough manager Dan Bockhorst says the fund now has $8.6 million. In Ketchikan, I'm Deanna Garrison.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Casey Kelly in Juneau, Len Anderson in Anchorage, Mark Earhart in Bethel, Deanna Garrison in Ketchikan, and Ben Matheson in Nome. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer, Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. Rasmussen Foundation announces a March 1st deadline to apply for individual artist awards, which provide funding directly to artists to support their creative work. Learn more by participating in one of their informational teleconferences to be held in January. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.